Welcome to another live edition of SHR Media Network here live at Freedom Fest 2015. We are here with Mr. Troy Eckerd. Welcome, sir.
Oh, thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
Thank you very much for being with us. And like to talk about your company, what you do. And
sounds good.
Love to hear about it. Can you please tell our listeners?
Yeah, Eckerd Global is a private energy management company out of Dallas, Texas. We've been involved in the energy space since 1985, and we mainly deal on private equity, where we work with specific high assets or assets of value, and we work with mainly investment funds, and we work with private high net worth clients. And so we are involved in exploration pipelines, midstream, and been doing it for quite a long time.
And, I've had a brief some time to look over your information. A lot of good information there, and you talk about the ability of America to become energy independent.
Sure.
And how can we do that? It's like, I mean, it seems like, you know, both sides of the aisle, they're always fighting about everything. We can't even get the Keystone Pipeline assigned, and we have so much energy here in stores in our country that how can we possibly achieve that right now? And I notice, I know that in some of your literature online and whatnot, you talk about how you think we're getting better. We're moving towards that goal, but with EPA regulations, the federal government, they can't get out of its own way. How do we achieve that? And how can investors assist with achieving that goal?
Well, the real answer is that cancer would be solved tomorrow if there was more money in solving cancer than paying for chemo medicine and oncology. So in the energy space, just as a simple statistic is, in 1941, the U.S. was putting out about 3.8 million barrels a day, and by 1971, we were up to 10.2 million barrels a day. And then from 1971 to 2008, we dropped back down to 3.8 million barrels per day. And the reason for that was we had limitations on technology, we had limitations on price. When something's very inexpensive, there's no motivation and greed. Well, what happened in 2008, oil prices were at $145 a barrel, and so these energy companies let loose of their R&D program and said, wait a minute, we've got the reserves in place, but we can't recover them with current technology and current pricing. When we jumped the price up, it opened up Pandora's box of really true technology, state-of-the-art, edge of tradition on getting oil and gas out of the ground with horizontal drilling and fracking. And we really are at about 9.4 million barrels a day. So 30 years to grow it, 30 years to lose it, and 4.5 years we're back to 9.4 million barrels. If oil prices were to get back to $75 to $80 a barrel, we would continue on a path a little slower, probably up to 15, 18 million barrels a day. We haven't even begun to touch the resources that are here in these shale plays. They're enormous, and they're very, very saturated. It's all about economy. It's about economics, 101.
So how do we get them? And are you talking about simply oil that's in the ground here in our country, or are you talking about offshore?
Well, offshore is pretty dynamic, but really when you think about it, there's two things that exploration companies have to worry about. The first one is that what's the risk? You know, if I put up $100 million to drill a field, is it an 80% chance I'm going to get my money back, or is it a 20% chance I'm going to get my money back? The nice thing about shale plays, if you look at the statistics, whether it's North Dakota or Texas, it's about a 98% success rate. So the replication of capital, being able to use that or recycle it, is very, very high. When you add offshore, the deep offshore, that's very high risk, very expensive, very long lead time on production, but it's enormous wells. So you're going to have that conventional drilling, but it's going to be balanced by this manufacturing process of shale drilling. And shale is now covering almost 30 states in the United States. It's not like we just found one little field. We essentially said we found, I think, the equivalent of Saudi Arabia in the United States.
Wow.
It's just more expensive. So what we need is a good, stable $75 a barrel. We need to have some consistency. Our biggest problem in this country right now, we don't have enough refineries. The oil that's being found in these shale plays is such a high-gravity crude oil, our refineries are not equipped to process it. So what we have is this backlog of a lot of oil that cannot be refined. It's a problem nobody anticipated, and it's happened in the last 4.5 years.
You know, you talk about non-conventional ways
Yep.
to extract this, to get this out, and to bring about our energy independence. What types of non-conventional ways are you talking about?
Well, everything from the way we design the drilling rig, the way we're drilling the wells, the way we're using walking rigs, we're jacking them up, moving them 50 feet at a time. They being the oil and gas industry, has really approached the shale, this revolution we're going through. They're approaching it like a large manufacturer. You did modular homes. They're saying, okay, look, we know we're going to find the reserves in the ground. We don't really have a whole lot of value in the geologist anymore. The engineers are our best friends. And what those engineers have done is said, look, we can drill them faster, quicker, longer horizontals. We can frack them with less water, less chemicals. We can frack them with higher results. And so each day, the engineers are tweaking the model, and they're extracting higher reserves at lower cost. So this really is a manufacturing process. I mean, I haven't talked to a good geologist in 5 years. We've got 300 wells in the Bakken. I don't need a geologist to tell me the oil's there. I need an engineer to get it out. So it's changed the entire risk profile of the oil and gas industry, which is dynamic if you mean sustainable long-term reserves for this country. If you look back 10 years ago, you know, Exxon could go drill a field, they hit a dry hole, it cost them $20 million, and they got to find something else of significant size. Shell's not like that. I mean, the Bakken itself has 900 billion barrels of oil in place. Today's technology says we can only get 11 billion out economically. So lots of oil, we just got a better technology.
So the technology's not there yet. Is it in development, or does it need finance right now in order to develop that, to be able to pull it out?
Well, capital is the mother of all inventions. So if you get up to $100 a barrel, these oil companies can take the risk to try even more advanced technology. So what happened in the boom from 2009 to last year is the price was so good and so sustainable that the cutting-edge technology, these oil companies said, look, I'm going to drill 150 wells this year in a horizontal field like the Eagle Ford in South Texas or the Bakken in North Dakota. Let's try a different frack, a different chemical, different type of sand. Let's try different water injection. So they were trying all this different profiles to say which one actually works. If you had a lower commodity price at $60 a barrel, you have a smaller margin for error. So higher prices mean a greater profit margin, which means the ability to expand your R&D. It's all driven by dollars. Now, I think in today's technology, one of the things that's driving current improvements is the fact their margins are so thin, they're having to figure out how to get more oil for less money out of the ground because they're struggling on the capital side. So you're getting actually a mother of invention because they have less profit.
Oh, wow.
So it's kind of on both ends of the spectrum. You know?
Right.
So it's pretty interesting. My brother drills wells for Halcon. He's been doing it for years, and he said, that, look, we've been told we got to cut costs by 35-40%. We've got to do X, Y, and Z. We've got to cut drilling time. And they've done it for the last 8 months. They're down, 35% on well costs.
And, people think that these oil companies make so much profit, and they're so rich, and they make so much money. Yet it's one of the worst – correct me if I'm wrong. Isn't it one of the worst profit margins in terms of – isn't it like 9%?
Yeah,
and you look at some of the other companies that the green people love, right? Apple and so forth, and they're what, 40 some odd percent?
Well, what's interesting is it's no different than dairy farmers, no different than ranchers that go out and risk all the money with weather and disease, raise cattle, and so when you go buy a steak in the store, you're pissed off if it's $8 a pound, right? But it may take actually $8 just to break even. But we've grown used to having cheap water, cheap food, cheap everything. We're also used to cheap fuel because it's the underpinnings of the entire U.S. economy. We have high cost of utility, high cost of fuel. It chokes off Apple's profit margin when they can't manufacture that cute little phone for cheap price.
Right.
The problem is that the oil and gas industry is a 100% consumer used product. So from the poorest to the richest, you're going to have to ride on the road. You're going to have to buy plastic. The microphone I'm speaking into is all made out of petroleum product. For that reason, it absolutely is on the front page every day, whether it's good or bad. So everybody wants oil prices cheaper. They like the last 8 months that the oil and gas industry is getting its tail kicked. But what they forget is the more we get beat down, when it does rebound, don't look at 145 as being something of a ceiling anymore. It's unlimited. Now, I'm not saying that's going to occur in the next 12 to 18 months. What I'm saying is that be careful what you ask for, because sometimes the repayment is twice as bad as the short-term gain.
You talk about oil and gas prices. Is what's happening in other parts of the world right now obviously affecting that market also? And what is that going to do for our ability in this country in terms of research and development gains that we could have to be able to get our own resources out to have that true energy independence?
Well, the oil and gas industry is very resilient. And one thing they've learned how to do is operate at very minimal cost. When I got in the business in 1985, natural gas prices were maybe 95 cents an MCF of gas, and we were dealing with $9 to $10 oil prices, and we still made money. So what will happen is that, all the analysts last year, name one analyst that predicted oil prices would drop. There is none. Name one person that decided that you could have, if you ask somebody, give me a map and show me the most economic shale plays in the country and tell me which part of that shale play is the sweet spot, and they couldn't tell you. Right now, the basic common information is go online and Google, riglocator.com and see where the rigs are. You've got your answer. I don't need an analyst. The rigs and the oil companies just told me the most prolific shale plays and the sweet spots in those shale plays by where those rigs are located. So the thing you got to remember is that the oil and gas industry is a very simple business. It is, I have a dollar to spend. For every dollar I spend, how many barrels of oil or MCF of gas can I recover for that dollar spent, and the probability of success versus failure, and that turns out to be their economics. So in this case, what we look at on a global energy basis is that we really don't supply the rest of the world with fuel because we keep it all contained in the U.S. Now, we have an export capacity for LNG, and we might actually get to export oil at some point. At today's market, what we're really dealing with is an outside force that's not governed by the same economics we are, Saudi Arabia. I mean, they're sitting on mounds of oil with very little infrastructure, and their economy can afford to drop prices. What I think we're looking at is that our industry will use this current shale play to sustain a certain output level, and every time we have spikes in the price, we'll take that as a chance to surge and increase and develop. And one of the things that most people don't realize is that in most of these shale plays, we're seeing production from only one well per lease. The reserves are so rich that in some cases, you're going to be talking 10 to 20 wells per lease. So it's proved reserves that the minute price goes up, they can quickly drill those wells and turn it on. So as a country, we really, I can't even tell you what the trade imbalance has been offset by producing an extra 6 million barrels in the U.S. If we produced another 6 million barrels, watch our $18 trillion debt go away in the next decade by simply being self-sufficient.
Should we be looking at not only becoming energy independent, but also with the longer term in place of being able to export our energy, whether it's liquid natural gas, whether it's oil and crude as well, because right now we have Russia that's supplying Europe, and the Middle East still, obviously, and I think, didn't we just go off the dollar as the standard as well? So should we be looking even beyond our own energy independence into maybe perhaps a true global market? And, I mean, not to get into politics too much, I know that's not what we're here for, but look, the way we defeated the Russians, and Putin's trying to put the band back together now, the way we defeated them under Reagan was energy policy.
Yeah.
Played a huge role in that. So should we be looking even beyond our own energy dependence? I agree with you that that's critical. Should we look beyond that
We're going to have to. It's no different than grain farmers or rice farmers or cattle or anything else that can be exported. The fact of the matter is that what most people don't get is that the shale that has been discovered the last 5 years is extremely high-gravity crude oil. All of our refineries, for the most part, were re-engineered back in the 70s for low-gravity crude oil because our decline curves were showing that the future customers for those refineries were losing all their output. So as refinery owners, the Koch brothers and everybody else said, wait a minute, all my customers are going away. Let's retrofit this refinery to handle lower-gravity crude oil from Venezuela and South America. Well, the shale crude oil that we get is pretty much condensate. It's 48 to 70 degree gravity. These refineries can't refine it. So what you have is this huge amount of oil, which we really need to have and retain in the U.S., can't be refined. So we're going to need to put it on Aframax tankers and ship it abroad to China and other Asian countries, et cetera. And we're going to be passing nasty, dirtier crude oil coming in from Saudi Arabia because that's what our refineries. So we're going to ship 6 million barrels out and 6 million the other way. We're just going to cross each other in the sea. What we really need is an energy policy that says, look, let's go ahead and put state-of-the-art new refineries in. Let's put them in strategically where these shale plays are. Let's make these refinery owners meet the current most top-of-the-line standards. But what we now can do is refine cheaper and better the own oil that we have, which then in turn lowers the price for consumers, but it gives the producers the economics to go ahead and sustain long-term development programs, which means we have what? A stabilized energy policy that we're self-contained with our own refineries. You got to get a government that's willing to do that. We haven't had that in 20-something years.
Would it be more cost-effective for a company to basically retrofit again or just the refinery? Because in this, there are a lot of states. Look at California. Look at these states that don't want anything to do with new refineries or anything else. You look what California's doing with trying to get shale stopped off of the coast and everything else. Is it more cost-effective or easy politically to retrofit refineries in those areas and perhaps build new refineries?
Well, my own opinion is pretty simple. First off, I like when New York and California say they don't want fracking. I'm from Texas, and I want to be able to charge them $145 a barrel because they don't want to. They have enough oil. There's a Monterey Shale in California which holds billions of barrels. They won't develop it. So, if certain states, because of environmental and other concerns, or just lack of real good education, they don't want to do it, that's good for those oil producing states that do want to generate it. Right? That's good. At the same time, when you take a look at the industry, it's no different than trying to the 8-track tape went out. Why? It was technologically past its time. You can only retrofit a refinery so well until you get to a point, kind of like an old car. I can put only so many carburetors in before it's better off to jack it up and roll a new one underneath it.
Right.
If you really want to meet the environmentalist concerns and you really want to do the right thing for the U.S. consumer, the best thing you could do is give tax credits to build refineries that are absolutely state-of-the-art, the best equipment possible. You do it under two conditions. Koch brothers, you can take and build a brand new refinery. We'll help you with tax advantages. We'll give you all the reason to do it. But we want that old refinery shut down in 15 years, replaced with this new one. So you basically do an exchange. And so you've met both. You've met the oil and gas industry's needs, but you've also satisfied those that have social and more environmental concerns. You got to have a policy. We don't have a policy. The policy is beat up your own U.S. energy companies, and but yet you send $15 billion to Brazil to drill offshore. It makes no sense. All he did by shutting down the Gulf of Mexico during the Macondo spill was he sent our deep rigs into other parts of the country, and you killed the economy in the Gulf of Mexico. That didn't help anybody.
And with and to countries that have zero or very, very small, low EPA standards as well.
Or any standards.
Or any standards, yeah, that's what I mean. Yeah,
pretty much we do what we want as long as we don't get caught by the globe.
Right.
You know?
What is it? Is there any negative impact in terms of what we as a country will be able to, first of all, develop it by putting money, by taking money away from research and development and building or basically refitting new refineries, number one? And number two, will it decrease our production while those new refineries are being built? If states say, no, we're not going to give you new space for it, like California, right, you have to put it where it already is and basically shut this down for X number of years.
Yep. Well, I think two things. I think that right now the oil and gas industry is pretty much like a snowball rolling down a hill. You got to understand that billions of dollars were spent in leasing minerals that have normally three-year terms. So these oil companies who have been slowed down on exploration as a result of the price of commodities, they're going to lose billions of dollars when those leases expire in 18 months. So they have an economic reason to continue drilling. The second reason they want to continue drilling is that there's a lot of infrastructure, pipelines, and facilities that were built. If we want to have a truly balanced market between advanced new technology refineries and midstream systems like processing plants and be able to phase out older, antiquated, less efficient, more environmentally concerning type facilities, you've got to have a plan. That plan should be, we don't want to financially discourage the exploration companies. We want, you know, you got to stick or sugar. You can beat us on the head or you can give us sugar. To me, if you want the oil and gas industry to do the absolute best, what you do is you give tax incentives and you give financial incentives. Say, if you don't have a violation, if you don't have a contamination, if you don't frack and cause problems, if you don't have saltwater disposal issues, if you do everything the way we want, here's all your advantages. If you don't, we start putting you on a watch list and you start getting disadvantaged or severe economic penalties. My dad used to say all the time, the man with the gold makes the rules. And if you sit there and start attacking somebody's gold, their pocketbook, you get their attention.
Absolutely.
That's the way I see it.
Yeah, absolutely. Mr. Eckert, it has been a pleasure, sir, speaking with you. Is there anything else? Where can our folks get more information? Where can they find you? What can they do?
Yeah, I'm on my company is Eckert Global. Our website is eckertglobal.com. We love to give independent advice. We love to provide information. We do own private ventures together. But the main thing is, you're smart investors out there. You're smart U.S. citizens. Think smart. It's not that we don't want to have petroleum in this country. We want to have responsible petroleum. But I'm going to ask every listener on this radio station, there is not a chance in the world that you're not using petroleum unless you show up walking down a dirt road butt naked. Because the fact is, everything you touch is petroleum. If you eliminate petroleum, even the iPhone will not be made.
And now my partner, Sean, does sometimes walk down the dirt road.
That could happen.
Naked,
that,
so he may not use.
That's
a
true. That's a true protester right there. Thanks for having me, Clint. Clint, I really appreciate it.
It's been a pleasure.
Yeah,
so thank you again.
Thanks again.
And SecHead Clint again, live from Freedom Press 2015 here on the SHR Media Network. Socko plays out.
The best late night conservative talk show in America, SecHeads Radio. And listen, there are no people better on the air to give you the best in conservative talk. Sackhead Sean and Sackhead Clint. And we're working on the immigration papers for a certain other guy who happens to work here, too. For those who are tuning in around the world to the best in late-night conservative talk, Sackhead's Radio. The best late night conservative talk show in America.
And in this web was a large, I'm pretty sure it was the biggest spider I've ever seen.